If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
So this was the headline of a story in the Herald yesterday. Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown reprimands Auckland Transport over handling of CBD parking charges. And it seemed to come out of the blue, an announcement of 24/7 parking charges in the CBD in Auckland. So we thought we'd get Morris Williamson, who is an Auckland City Councillor. We all know Morris, he's been around for ages, on to get his comment on this. Morris, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure, Paul.
Okay, so has there been anything since that headline I mentioned, which was yesterday?
Yeah. Actually, last night, the Auckland Transport people put out a press release. So you'll be pleased to know it says AT delays the city centre overnight parking changes until the 1st of October. Auckland Transport confirms it'll delay it. Auckland Transport Chief Executive Dean Kimpton says the proposal to delay the overnight changes to 1 October allows for keeping the mayor and councillors sufficiently informed and further discussion with key stakeholders. I have also told the mayor we are sorry we could have done better at keeping him and other important stakeholders sufficiently informed. I mean, this is a bit of a no-shit Sherlock press release. I mean,
yeah.
What do you expect when you throw a hand grenade into a shed that contains nothing but diesel oil? Boom.
I can see why the mayor was grumpy. I guess a lot of our listeners are thinking, Morris, maybe you can help us with this. What were they thinking?
Well, I'm always reminded of there was a wonderful Roman general a couple of thousand years ago when some of the Goths evidently walked straight in front of their big sort of whatever you call them, Shanghai-type things that fire burning stuff all
catapult.
Over. And one of his lieutenants said to them, what on earth were they thinking? And he said, I think the problem was they weren't.
Yeah.
And I would give that same response. I mean, one of the things I've learned in local government, which you don't do at central government level, is if you're going to do something that affects the community and local government really touches the community a lot more than a central government issue, you've got to sort of consult with the affected parties. You don't need to agree with them, but they've got to see what it is you're proposing, make submissions in terms of are they, you know, sometimes they'll say we don't want it and we say, well, bad luck, it's going ahead, but there may be some changes you could make. And I think this was really quite a ham-fisted a proposal. It sort of came out of the blue. The poor old shopkeepers who are struggling like hell to get people back into the centre city, but since the COVID breakdown and everything else, they're at way less than their normal volumes of customers, and suddenly, bang. And of course, you've got a lot of people that we've tried to encourage to live in the city centre, lots and lots of apartments now, with no car parking, by the way. A whole lot of the greenies in this world have thought, dreadful to build buildings with car parks, so let's build lots and lots of buildings without car parks, and that'll sort them out. Well, there are people with cars because they have to. They've got to go places and so on. I thought one of the most interesting ones was from a whole lot of cleaners who come into the city at very sort of late midnight type and work all night cleaning and then head out before everyone arrives back at work. And they're going to now be paying, you know, a whopping great sum of money to park on a street that had nothing on it unless they park to do the cleaning. So I would have thought, you know, my view is if you are going to move in this direction, you would have gone to changing the timeframes instead of finishing, say, at 6 o'clock at night, making it finish at 9 o'clock at night. And instead of starting again at 7 in the morning, say, let's move it till it starts at 5 in the morning. And then have that for a while until people can understand it. I'm not opposed to trying to charge for scarce resources and for people to make a contribution to what it's really costing to provide, as you know, those assets and so on. But I thought this was very ham-fisted. I thought it was a very appalling way to put things out. And what I thought was quite amazing was the chief executive did a interview with Heather Duplessy Allen a couple of nights ago, and she basically actually called it. She said, well, you won't be able to stay with us. This will have to be walked back. And he said, oh, no, this is it. This is what we're doing. And she twice said, well, you know, it won't stand. It can't stand. And he said, no, it will. And now last night, as I said, they put a press release out saying they've walked it back. So,
well, that sounds like arrogance.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, there is this big question about Auckland Transport. If you take every other local authority in New Zealand, they have control over their transport operation and can dictate to them what they do and don't do, etc. When the Auckland City was set up as this big monolithic, ginormous, you know, 1.5 million people and a 36% of New Zealand's GDP, the creative fathers of this, which one of your hosts, I think Rodney Hyde was one, but certainly Stephen Joyce and others, they were thinking this transport is so big in this thing, we better try to set it up as a separate entity so that it doesn't have political interference from the councillors on a daily basis and we end up with all sorts of wish lists. So there's some merit in keeping it in that arm's length separate. But in return for that, you would expect them to act, you know, in the best interest of the public and their shareholders, which are the ratepayers of Auckland, who are paying bloody big rates all the time and going up all the time. And there seems to have been a degree of, we're just going to bowl ahead and do whatever we like, because I understand even the board of the Auckland Transport weren't briefed fully on all this. So if you don't brief your board and you don't brief the mayor and you don't brief councillors, but you just box on, look, I'm going to give you a warning right now. It's almost likely to blow back in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a no-brainer. You mentioned scarce resource just before. Are car parks actually a scarce resource? Car park buildings obviously have cost money, but it's just...
Well, do you know what a car park in Auckland costs? There are car parks, just one car park for sale. And prices range from about $95,000 to $130,000 for the car park.
Yeah, no, I know that's if you want to buy one, but
yes,
you know,
well, there's an associated with if you're holding on to a building that if it was replaced with a big revenue raising, you know, be it apartment or be it office block or be it a restaurants and office block and apartment combo, you'll get a phenomenal return from that land footprint if you aren't going to be charging for car parking at a realistic return on your investment. You'll soon get out of that business, sell the building, knock it down, and you'll end up with even less facilities for car parks. So I'm okay with it being an asset that has to get a return on what its value, what its cost of capital at a bare minimum would be. But then you've got to say, well, you know, is it right to just go into the streets for which the ratepayers have already paid through their rates over the years to have built, and which during the night will not really have much demand for parking other than night workers and people who live in an apartment. And there was a really good article, I think, in the Herald the day before yesterday about a woman who's really ill and having to go and get treatment and so on, and the only place she can park her car is out the front of the building, and she literally won't be able to afford it. So these things can often be worked through, the exceptions you might make, the fact you might give a resident a particular card that they can put in the front of their car to say exempt because of or whatever. If you work them through carefully and you explain what you're trying to do, in many cases you can finally get there and everyone says, yeah, oh, well, I guess that's the way things go these days. You never even have to put money in a meter many years ago in parts of the place, city, and now you do. But if you do it badly, if you just drop a nuclear bomb in the middle of town and go boom, and then say, yeah, take that and bad luck, and you realise that the implications when you're trying to get people back into the city, to the nightlives, into the restaurants and the bars and so on, because they're not there yet.
I was kind of referring to this imposition of 24/7. I think we're all used to the, you know, parking fees that we've had to pay during regular hours over a long period of time. It just seemed like a bit of a money grab.
Well, yeah, in a way, there'll always be a money grab from the council. It's got huge expenses and there's people wanting. Every time I go to one of the committee meetings that I chair, I'm chair of Revenue and Expenditure Committee, there is people that want to spend some more on this and we'd like to spend more on that and we need more for this and we need a lot more for that. and you sit there going, wow, there's a mentality of everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Yeah.
Well, if you want all these good, no one wants to pay. Yeah, correct. So if you want all these good things, someone's going to pay. The problem you get is, somebody else can pay. The rich can pay. Well, if you look at some of the rates that people out in my way in Bucklands Beach, just because they have a view of the ocean, their house might be a pretty ordinary, quite small, quite ordinary, but because it gets a view of the ocean, you know, you're talking $9,000, $10,000, $11,000 of rates.
Yeah.
And you think, and if it's a couple on a fixed income, say they're, you know, retired couple and all they've got is their national super, any of the increases we're trying to put on rates all the time really hurts them badly. I've never quite figured out why your rates were related to how good a view you got. It doesn't seem right. That's not how much resource of the city you use. You know, I found an example not very far from a lovely little crib where an elderly couple lived in Bucklands Beach, and the family who lived slightly behind the hill and didn't get a view, they had three teenage kids, all who were on the road every day, all day. The mum and dad were on the road. There were five cars parked on the front lawn. They were using up roading and everything else big time, but their rates were about a third of the elderly couple because they could see the ocean and weren't their car hardly ever left. So I think some of the historic ways we've funded local government are going to need to be reviewed.
I was going to say something needs to give or is going to give at some point, surely.
Well, I think the new Minister of Transport, Simeon Brown's proposing something that I think will be the start of it. He's saying, how about we stop having petrol tax at the pump? And how about we stop having exemptions for an electric vehicle? And how about we stop having this for diesel and so on? And how about we actually have a charging based on the kilometres you travel and the weight that your vehicle is? And so it won't matter if it's powered by hydrogen or powered by rubber bands that you wind up before you get into it.
Flintstones.
Whatever. Yeah, the Flintstones. You're still doing the same damage to the tarmac because you're traveling that much of a distance with that much of a weight. And right now there's a variation. You either pay an excise check at the pump, which makes it ridiculous because if you've got a very inefficient fuel processing car, you may be in twice as much fuel as a more modern car to do the same kilometres. So you're paying twice as much for the road use, but you're not using twice as much of the road. So I think if Simeon Brown moves in the direction, I think it's overdue that you actually end up paying what a diesel car. I've got a diesel vehicle, and every 10,000 K, I've got to pay a road user charge and put a label inside my window, and that's for the next 10,000 kilometres at which that vehicle travels. If that happens, I think we'll get a more common sense way of charging for road usage than just the value of your house. I've always asked an audience, how would you feel if when you walked up to the counter at Air New Zealand, the charge they made for your airfare wasn't related to your destination or wasn't related to the class you were traveling in, but what your address was.
Yeah, or the clothes you're wearing.
Sir, you live in Bucklands Beach Road, sir. That's a $7,000 fare. The guy behind you comes up and he lives in sort of Brown Street, wherever. Oh, sir, that's only $2,000 because of your address. And everyone laughs. And I said, well, why are you laughing? And they said, that's ridiculous. I said, okay, well, what if your electric power bill was related to where you live, your address, rather than how much power you burn? Well, don't be stupid, they say. I said, well, hang on, I can give you lots more. What about gas bill based on your address rather than how much gas? Right, okay. But when it comes to the road charge, which big chunk of your rates, a very big chunk of the rates everyone pays is towards their local road funding, why is it that it's to do with the value, the address of your house rather than what you use like you do with power and water and gas and all of the others? So I think there'll be changes coming, but of course it's quite a lot of work and some years down the track before those changes happen.
Well, just the way you laid it out, of course, is, you know, it's obvious. How come we go on with such archaic, outdated methods of funding certain things when it's so obvious?
Well, that's just the way it's been historically. You know, instead of paying for what you use, and if you use twice as much gas as somebody else, you pay twice as much for it. And if you use twice the electricity, you pay twice for it. In this case, you could actually use four times as much roading as another house. Like, as I said, that family with three teenagers and two parents, they've got five cars on the road every day, wow. And yet their rates are a third of what the elderly couple with a Honda Civic that never moves and that big chunk of that rates goes towards paying for the roads. So I think there is a time where new funding streams will be required, and they'll be more directly related to your use. And I think that first part of the work will follow the work that I think Simeon Brown's on to big time, that we will eventually move. It'll be a while in the future because it takes quite a bit of work to get it there, but we'll move to you will pay for the distance that you travel and the weight that your vehicle was, because that's what does the damage to the tarmac, is the weight.
Couple of quick questions just to end. Back to, you know, if 24/7 parking was to go in, how would that be policed, do you think? Is that all electronic or digital or something?
No, I think you'd probably have parking wardens wandering the street.
Really?
Well, Paul, I can't tell you because I wasn't consulted, and just sort of came out in the media to doing it, and I thought, oh my God, that begs so many questions. You know, and if you do put a parking warden out, they could cost you, you know, however many dollars for their wages. And they might collect a quarter of what you're paying them, and so you're actually chasing your tail, losing money. So, look, I don't know. I mean, in the end, I think AT have quite seriously decided we're going to back on this one, and we're going to retract back and look at it again, and there may have to be exemptions for certain things. People with medical conditions who have got a park nearby their apartment so they can get to a hospital, who knows what they are, but I would have thought a little bit of good public consultation, a discussion paper, and then finally everyone saw what's coming. And you may still not like it, but I think a lot of people would have then got to understand why it's being done. And my view is the first thing they should have done is just extend the shoulders of the time zone, push back a little bit later and bring it back a little bit earlier in the morning. And that would have been at least a statement that eventually we're going to finally move more and more over time to trying to get it all.
For the AT management involved, is that a firing offence? You know,
well, no, I don't think anything's a firing offence at AT. The sort of it seems that they can do. I mean, I would have to, if I was a member of the board, I would want to know from senior management, how did this happen? How did we not get briefed, and how did we not go out and consult more widely? And how did, when we have a document that went out, people were well and truly aware it was coming. They knew why it was. They knew what the exemptions were. And even then, you'd still find people that opposed it. Of course, everything I've ever been involved in politics that involves someone paying more, there is opposition to it. But normally that opposition sort of dwindles away if you explain what it's for, why it is. And again, I've always wanted to see what our comparable jurisdictions do. What happens in Sydney? What happens in Melbourne? I don't know, you see. But do they charge during the night in the central city? Because if that's the common thing that's happening in London and Paris and so on, I think that's the way we will go. We normally always move in that direction of our counterparts. But a good consultation document would have said, you know, comparable cities to us in Australia, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, they've been doing this for a couple of years already or whatever.
Hey, great to get your view of things on this, Maurice Williamson. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day in life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.